I did tell John a while back that I'd do a service in October, but as October approached, I was beginning to think, is there some way I could beg off? Just didn't feel I had a sermon in me. And then Margie called, and that's always good. And we had one of our phone conversations that ended up talking about God. Margie and I talk about God a lot, behind his back. And I was going on about something, and she said, well, I think there's a sermon there. And so I guess there is, if Margie says so. And if none of this makes sense to you, ask Margie to explain. I intend to. I often wonder how much of God we can really handle. I don't feel ready for some sort of enlightenment, and sometimes I'm not ready for even a little baby step. On those occasions when I feel the presence of God, I definitely don't want anything that I just won't understand or that makes my life so different that I don't know who I am. And I definitely don't want lots of thunder and lightning, literal or figurative. I don't mind admitting that tiny sips of divinity are about all I can handle. Had I been Moses, I would have hid out somewhere, maybe like Jonah in the belly of a whale or something. Okay, so here's what Margie thought interesting. Imagine, if you will, Moses climbing up the mountain to speak to God, to listen to God. He's had some traumatic experiences lately. Reluctantly, he agreed to talk to Pharaoh, let my people go, and so they went, but there's all these plagues and everything, and that's all behind him, but it's still, my God, what have I gotten myself into? And now we've got this journey through the wilderness, and the people are getting really kind of rebellious, and they don't listen to me. And so he kind of had in mind what God ought to be doing, ought to be giving him a lot of rules and saying, you tell those people that they better follow those rules. So Moses put the fear of God into them. Sometimes things don't work out like we think they should. So lost in thought, Moses is going up the mountain thinking about what kind of rules these people need, and all of a sudden there's thunder, lightning. I forgot the trumpets, Ralph. Thank you. All kinds of scary stuff. At first he thinks, just a regular storm, a little more severe than usual, but lightning strikes right at his feet, and holy Christmas, this must be how God lets us know who we are in relationship to him. So he arrives at the top of the mountain, falls on his knees, and cries out, thou art a mighty God and fearful, ruler of thunder and lightning. What words have you for your servant? How may we please you and earn your blessing that you may help us on our journey through the wilderness? Thou hast but to speak, O mighty one, your people will obey. Suddenly there's silence. The thunder and lightning stop. Then in the silence, God very softly whispers, be still and know that I am God. To you, Moses, my good and faithful servant, I will give the key to knowing and understanding the world in which I have placed you, that you may thereby come to understand me and love me. It's simple, subtle, beautiful. List as I speak. There's a pause, and God says, E equals MC squared. I can see Moses cocking his head, looking up. Is this truly some bit of wisdom that I'm to carry with me and repeat and ponder over as we go through the wilderness and beyond? Is God really trying to help me understand the nature of his creation? Or, right. God is sharing the secrets of his being and creation with me? No. He's just reminding me of who I am in relationship to him. What was it he said to Job Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? So still on his knees, Moses cries out even more fervently than before. You know the routine. Thou art the mighty and fearsome, yada, yada, yada. How may we, unworthy as we are, please you and get your blessing as we journey through the wilderness? With this, the thunder and lightning return, and Moses becomes even more frightened, yet even more determined to learn from God how to avoid his wrath. Mercy, mercy, O mighty, powerful one. Please, what must we do so that you will withhold your wrath from us poor creatures? Poor creatures. Well, there's silence again, and again the soft voice, be still and know that I am God. Moses, you are not a poor creature. Moses, you are the bearer of life, my proudest creation. Listen, I will reveal to you the secret that is the foundation of all life. It is simple, subtle, beautiful. And as you come to explore and understand it, you will come to know and love me and understand your kinship with all that lives. A symbol I will give you that you may grave it on a stone tablet and carry it with you through the wilderness and beyond. As you and your descendants contemplate this symbol, the secret source of all life will unfold before you. Moses, do you know how to carve a double helix? O thou mighty one, whatsoever thou givest us to worship, we shall worship it diligently in whatever manner you prescribe. Only let us escape your wrath and know that thou wilt help your poor people as we journey through the wilderness, yada, 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 yada. Carry the scribe stone wherever we go. Carry it before us as we face our enemies, that they may know we are your chosen people because we carry the magic stone of your blessing. The thunder and lightning do not immediately return. Rather, there's an odd puff of wind which starts strong and slowly dies, leaving the air perfectly still. In his agitated state, Moses is in no way able to recognize this as God sighing and perhaps rolling his eyes. But it was a sigh, followed by, of course, thunder and lightning, even are the mess. It is well that you kneel before me with your eyes to the dirt and so on. So I'm a vengeful God, and yada, 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 yada. I give you laws, and you will be saved from my wrath if you obey these laws, and I will help you through the wilderness, yada, yada. Now it's Moses' turn to sigh, a sigh of relief. Finally, Moses thinks to himself, we're getting somewhere. God is speaking my language. I think actually God handled the situation pretty well. The thunder and lightning seemed a bit much, but that was what all the other gods did in those days. And God was willing finally to acknowledge that Moses maybe knew better than he did what he needed. He really did need those rules. Even while they were speaking, the people were down there. They were making a golden calf, a sort of a off-the-shelf, do-it-yourself deity, tried-and-true form, you know. So some of the laws he gave Moses were common sense. How could humans live in society without some of these laws? Some of them were really weird. How to build the tabernacle tent in the wilderness. But it kept them busy and out of trouble, so maybe that wasn't a bad idea too. So confrontations with God, I guess is what I'm talking about. Is God somehow teaching us as we go about our faith journey? Or maybe even waiting somewhere for us to make the climb and enter his presence? If so, it's easy to think that God will expect way too much of us, and in the end we'll feel like miserable failures. We'll think, well, no wonder he's always smiting us or giving us boils or whatever. But surely God knows that E equals MC squared is something you work towards gradually, building a basis, and eventually over time you will see that it is simple, subtle, and beautiful. That you can't blame God for wanting to bring it up, because he can't blame him for being proud of that little energy matter pas de deux. It's really quite splendid. Maybe God teaches us or sends the right person to teach us or puts us in the right circumstances. But, of course, we can be pretty fixed in our own idea of what we need. And this is why we pray again and again and again and again and again for a pony. It's also why we turn over the Pharaoh cards until we find the money and the lover. Sometimes this isn't all that bad. As I say, Moses knew what he needed. And the story of God and his stiff-necked people and their tumultuous relationship is interesting stuff, something to think about as story and as myth. It's a big mistake, I think, to see it as somehow a literal demonstration of how God wants to be worshipped, feared, really, and how he wants society ordered. And most of us today understand a relationship with God in terms of a personal relationship, with a loving community to support us in however we go about that. You get a whole nation or tribe or party thinking about God in the same way, and that leads to all kinds of mischief. Sometimes we find ourselves in the midst of figurative thunder and lightning, and this serves to get our attention. And some of us deliberately seek mountaintop experiences, may even do so on a real mountain. I prefer to look for hints of God in my daily life. I honestly don't think I'm ready for the God of Mount Horeb. We can learn to cultivate an expectant attitude so that we are awake and notice when it seems that God is indeed speaking. Most often, I think, speaking through the material of our everyday life without the need for special effects. I said God, I don't know, whatever works best for you. A force, a feeling, something that's always whispering to us and we ignore it or we don't understand it. But whatever it is that whispers to us, you can call it God. I usually call it God. Somehow in the proper season, some of that which is whispered ripens for us and we see it clearly. It's hard to predict what will bring about this knowledge of a new thing, this or this assuredness that some old thing must be abandoned. Bible reading and memorizing Bible verses ain't what it used to be. But yeah, sometimes a Bible verse can, whoa, finally I understand, and something happens. It's a marvel how the stuff of ordinary life has the power to catch us by surprise and suddenly make us feel we're in a thin place. John has spoken of thin places. It's a place where you suddenly feel that there's just some kind of a thin membrane between you and, well, there's this membrane. So maybe it's a Bible verse, maybe it's a song, not necessarily a sacred song. Maybe watching the graceful ascent and landing of a waterfowl will stop you in your tracks and you'll hear a whispered, "Be still and know that I am God." I still think of the young woman who I observed smelling of the bread during communion. I'm not sure I can explain how, but to me it reminded me that in the right hands the commonplace becomes sacramental. And what about lifesavers? Many of you were here a few weeks ago when Linda Baines guided us as we shared the experience of eating a lifesaver, each of us responding in their own way, I'm sure. Putting the lifesaver at center stage in expectation that it was worth experiencing fully made that lifesaver, or rather, made the experience of that lifesaver somehow important. Okay, a Bible verse, a song, a children's game, lifesavers. I just don't know. Look again at the service meditation and consider for a moment the innocent, uninhibited fun of hokey pokey. Maybe it's not what we think of as sacred dance or an ecstatic encounter with God within us. Under some circumstances, might it not have that kind of power? For starters, can't it be seen as maybe a celebration of our bodies, a celebration of our bodies in defiance of what the passing years tell us? Or a celebration of our bodies in defiance of what maybe our earliest religious education told us about our bodies? I don't know. I know Anthony Quinn didn't do the hokey pokey in Zorba the Greek. Who's to say that hokey pokey couldn't somehow have made the same point? I believe the journey we are on is a human journey, and that progress, or at least a satisfying sense of progress, is possible for any human. And I believe progress can sometimes come from simply looking at an old thing in a new light. My own preference being the light of humor, even though I know this sometimes seems irreverent to others. So here's the thing I'm trying to say, I guess. Should have cut to this a long time ago. Mountaintop experiences may or may not come to you. Anyway, there's a danger in seeking them. Putting enormous energy into climbing a mountain to see a guru or to find God, or whatever. This can be a mistake. Investing energy and resources to seek an audience with God, it only prepares you for self-deception. Do you ever know anybody come back from Tibet and say, that's all right? So you have to be afraid that you're going to likely conjure up some sort of heavy-duty experience that really wasn't there, or else you're going to invite a genuine experience that you really aren't spiritually ready to handle. Be open for whatever comes, of course, but meanwhile, learn to experience and to marvel at the ways our everyday life offers you hints of God in small doses. I know my own nature well enough to know that I need to learn to see God, rather than seek God. As if he'd gone missing.